Blog Talk Radio. Talk show host, Steve Allen was born today, and he was married to one of the I forgot her name. She was also an actress. I think she starred with Jackie Gleason on his show. Jane Meadows. Great actor with a great voice, big husky guy. Donald Moffat was born today, and those of you who remember Beckett, he played the bishop who was angling to become Archbishop of Primate of England, and he opposed pangs of conscience when he challenged Henry II. And also the wife of Dukakis, governor of Massachusetts who ran for president, Kitty Dukakis, was born today. One of the great record producers, got in a lot of problems, Phil Spector, was born today. Among the interesting deaths, the founder of the Mongol dynasty, Zahir Adir Muhammad Bukhar, who was the Shah, he founded the Mongol dynasty. He died today. During the Civil War in Mankato, Minnesota, 38 Sioux Indians were hanged for insurrection. This was in 1862, just as the Civil War was getting underway. And in 1890, Heinrich Schliemann was an archaeologist. He started work on discovering the origins of the Trojan War. And then one of the most interesting assassinations in World War II, that of Admiral Francois Darlan, who was head of the French Navy and who was in North Africa as a vice premier representing General Pétain and the Nazis. He was assassinated by a young journalism student named Boisseur de la Chapelle. And the kid was, young man was hanged a few days later, or was executed by firing squad. He's only 24 years old, but a lot of guys, even younger, were executed and tortured. And then one of the great cheapskates, and like to brag about it, Jack Benny, who was from Cook County, violinist, and he was actually very good. He also was in the Navy in World War I. He died in 1974. And the Hart Senate building in Washington is named after this senator who died today. One of the great movie directors and producers, Howard Hawks, did Atari. He died today. Eleanor Eliza Lancaster, the wife of Charles Lawton, she knew he was gay and she tolerated it, and their marriage lasted. She died today. And then the guy, who was Archbishop of Canterbury, but the Irish playwright Samuel Beckett, died today. Among the interesting events today, we have in 1492, the first Spanish settlement in the New World was set up today. In 1799, George Washington was praised as first in war, first in peace, and first in the hearts of his countrymen. And then the important entry to the West through commerce, the Erie Canal was opened today. I think the governor was DeWitt Clinton, New York. And then we had the Major Anderson, who was actually a Southerner, U.S. Army. He secretly brought in a small military force to occupy, or not occupy, but to buttress Fort Sumter, but he eventually had to surrender. This is Fort Sumter in the bay here, in South Carolina. Then in 1862, the first U.S. Navy hospital ship was set up. In 1865, if you like coffee, the first coffee percolator was invented by James Mason. I don't know if he invented the Mason jar, but you can think today, when you look at all those Starbucks and all of these coffee shops or baristas, how far coffee and the brewing of it, even the roasting of it, has come since from 1902, or from 1865, excuse me. And then we had the biggest number, the largest number of knockdowns in a boxing match, 42 of them. The guy knocked down, or the guy did it, it's not clear, this guy named Chancey Williams. 42 knockdowns, the guy's brain must have been rattled. And then in 1917, when the United States entered World War One under President Thomas Woodrow Wilson, the government took over the railroads for the duration of the war. 1926, another war hawk became Emperor of Japan, Hirohito. Became Emperor of Japan, I think he died in the early 80s. And then refugees from Nazi Germany and from Europe in 1936 went to what was known as Palestine, and they set up the Israel Philharmonic, a great orchestra, and musicians from all over the world, including people like Arturo Toscanini, who was Catholic, Italian, conducted that orchestra. Then in 1941, Churchill became the first British Prime Minister to address a joint meeting of Congress. And, of course, Churchill's mother was an American, Jenny Jerome. Her father was a publisher of the New York World, I think it was. And then this is a debate, but one of the last of the German pocket battleships, the Scharnhorst, was sunk. And then 1954, it was the last broadcast of The Shadow. And we are going to play, there'll be two of them. This will be the first one is the last radio broadcast of The Shadow. One of the great voices in radio and in film was a Canadian who came from the Yukon, served in the U.S. Navy in World War One, Victor Jory. And the connection via my relationship with KALW-FM here in San Francisco, Ted Samuel had studied after World War II on a GI Bill, had studied at the Pasadena Playhouse, where he met his wife also. And he met Victor Jory. I think Victor Jory was a teacher there. And Victor Jory had this great voice, which we're now here now. And he did a pilot for The Shadow, I think in 1940.
The man you are searching for is tied up in room 25 at the Acme Hotel on the waterfront.
Hello, hello. The Acme Hotel.
By trucking me here, I suppose you imagine you know who I am.
I've known for some time. Your magic won't save you. The day of the Black Tiger is nearly finished.
You're wrong, Shadow.
I've left your name with the police along with all the evidence I've gathered against you. The reign of the Black Tiger is over. No. To you, I'll always be the Shadow.
Weston speaking.
The Black Tiger is dead. You will find his body at the arcade garage.
Hello, hello.
That was Victor Jory doing that evil, malevolent, delightful laugh. We're restating our focus for 2012. We're going to have more interviews and information. And, of course, our focus is some of the things you wanted and needed to know but didn't know where, who, and how to ask. Among the exposés will be media people who lie, distort, and omit, and this perfidious conduct of these people is costing Americans. Case just came up of a guy who did a lot of damage. I think he wrote 40 articles which were fraudulent, named Stephen Glass, who decided he was going to study to become a lawyer. So he went to law school, which they should have checked his background for ethics and morality, and he graduated from law school, which is no guarantee. There are law schools that apparently do not teach their students ethics, morality, They may be competent at writing a legal brief and preparing an argument for court, and even know how to do legal research, although a lot of them do less and less. Anyway, Glass decided he was from the East, and he worked for the New Republic, and they fired him. Now he wants the California State Bar to license him as a lawyer in California. And a lot of people are opposed to this. And, of course, if the bar licenses him, considering that they're under fire, there are an estimated 2,000 cases of lawyers who have done all kinds of fraudulent things. Of course, we can name people that I have personally dealt with. George Walker, who ripped off $35,000 from U.S. Navy sailor Stephen Neri. We have Terrence Hallinan, who allowed his employees to forge federal military documents, destroy U.S. military mail in the Stephen Neri case. We'll get into more of that. We have John Farrell. It's a common name for somebody who's very common in the worst definition of the term. He rigged this case. There's a term called rogue lawyers, which now some of the press is beginning to use about these lawyers who are out of control, who are prosecutors, and who'll do anything to win a case so they look good and enhance their chances for promotion and a bigger salary. This is going on, and it's costing the American taxpayers millions of dollars, and people have got to become aware of that, and the media has got to start exposing these people. They can't lie because it's out there. Now, one of the myths about American media is that Jews, or people of Jewish heritage, control all of the media. That's not true. It's a fiction. To give you an example, let's talk about people who are Jewish, or their Jewish background, because a lot of them decided to assimilate and join the Episcopalian faith, Anglicans. The New York Times, which was supposed to be the flagship paper, no longer is, was started by German Jews from Tennessee, the Oaks family, O-C-H-S, and some of them anglicized their name to O-A-K-S, and Sulzberger. Who are the owners of the New York Times, which unfortunately may as well have been dumped in the East River, the way they omit so much that should be publicized. The Philadelphia Inquirer was started by a Jewish family bought them, and they had the racing bulletin, later became ambassador to the Court of St. James in the Reagan administration. They were Jewish. We had, I think, Alan Neurath, the guy that owned or controlled the TV paper. They were Jewish. We had now, out here in San Francisco, the San Francisco Chronicle was started by two Dutch Jews who started a little sheet which they circulated, and they went around and discovered or exposed or investigated the foibles and political scandals of prominent people, and then went to them and said, if you pay us off, we won't publish what we found out. So that paper evolved into the San Francisco Chronicle, but that's its Jewish background, the two Dutch Jews, the De Youngs. Washington Post was bought by a guy named Meyer, whose daughter, Catherine Graham, and Graham was Jewish, anglicized the name. She became a Lutheran. She worked briefly at the San Francisco Chronicle and later took over the Washington Post, became most famous when the Pentagon Papers came out. Now, the other major papers, which were not owned by Jews or started by people of Jewish heritage, Chicago Tribune was started by a Canadian guy named Joseph Medill from Nova Scotia, and then Colonel McCormick was part of that family, and they weren't Jewish in any way. I don't think they married into any Jewish families. The Los Angeles Times was started by a Southern Confederate who wasn't Jewish, Chandler. And was later, ironically, bought by the Chicago Tribune, and now it's in deep, deep trouble. The McClatchy Papers out here in California, not Jewish, Scotch-Irish probably, So this gives you an example of papers. There's different people involved in the media. Now, CBS, Columbia Broadcasting, was started by Walter Pilevsky from Chicago, cigar manufacturer. He was Jewish. I don't know if he practiced. He married a woman named Paley, and Babe, rather. I forgot her last name. She was Episcopalian. He converted. We had David Sarnoff, RCA, which became, which owned NBC, National Broadcasting Corporation, Russian Jewish background. I don't know if he practiced. ABC, which was the last major broadcast network. Goldenson, and then Redstone, Jewish people. Of course, again, we don't know if they're practicing. The thing is, it's so difficult to pin people down, even with Jewish heritage names, because some of them, you know, they eat ham, bacon. They may or may not go to synagogue on the high holy days, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, that sort of thing. But this is the way a lot of these people live, even though they have that heritage. And, of course, Hitler had a Jewish grandmother, and, of course, that's what we call self-hatred, the way he behaved. Now, one of my, Steven Spielberg, I don't know if he practiced Jewish, the latest movie he's come out with, War Horse, I haven't seen it. We will preview it, but I, from what I understand, that what really happened at the Battle of the Somme in World War I in France has not been well publicized, and I happen to have the interview of Lieutenant, who was a lieutenant at the time, Trevor Hodges, who was in the British Guards, and he was in the trenches at Somme, and I asked him about the battle, and he discussed what happened and what the British Army did with the horses. So this will be interesting, and we'll wait till we see the movie, and then we will probably play his part of that interview, because Hodges also survived Gallipoli in World War I, and after the war, there was a depression in England. He emigrated to the United States, later became a vice president of Chrysler, and during World War II, became an American citizen, and he joined the U.S. Army and became a colonel. He was posted up here in Northern California in charge of a WAC unit, a Women's Army Corps. So a lot of these people have a fascinating history. And, of course, we in our archives, we have a lot of these military men's audio interviews. Unfortunately, I didn't get one of Raoul. I mean, just an oversight on my part. And several other. But we'll be bringing up a lot of this in January and throughout the next year. And also, we'll probably launch our next media. We're going to keep this one, the new shadow, Amicus, the new shadow, that'll be the name. And we're working on that with the technical equipment. We're having a minor problem with some of the stuff here. So we'll be back Wednesday, and we will end with our usual politics and poker. I wish these presidential candidates, with political candidates for the presidential nomination of their party, maybe sit down and play poker, and whoever wins gets the nomination, because people are getting tired of these debates. So here it goes.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony. Up to you.
Okay, Johnny, what are you
going
to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Hit me with a
kick. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We got to pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the cash?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Impulse.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met them.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and polka, politics and polka, shuffle up and cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
where to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fajicinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and poker! Politics and poker! Play for a pot that's mediocre! Politics and poker! Running neck and neck! If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck!
Pacific Standard Time. Good night.